This is Audible.
Penguin Random House Audio presents How Luck Happens, using the new science of luck to transform life, love, and work by Janice Kaplan and Barnaby Marsh. This is the author, Janice Kaplan. Preface. You don't have to travel very far in Hollywood to encounter men and women driving Uber cars or doing chores for TaskRabbit as they wait for the lucky break that will catapult them to stardom. Many majored in drama in college or starred in a hometown production of Rent, and now they need someone else to notice their talent too. You have to give yourself a chance to get lucky, said Cassie, a bright-eyed redhead I met one warm evening at a cafe on Sunset Boulevard. She was behind the bar, making her signature Moscow Mule, vodka, lime, and ginger beer. I ordered a Diet Coke. But making the perfect drink wasn't what kept Cassie going. As we chatted, she told me she had recently graduated from college and had driven her beat-up Kia 2,000 miles west to come to Hollywood. Now she was waiting for the lucky encounter that would make her a star. I just keep saying to myself, Harrison Ford, Cassie said. Ah, yes, lucky Harrison. His early adventures are as legendary among acting aspirants as the exploits of Indiana Jones. When he first arrived in Los Angeles in the 1960s, Ford got so little attention for his acting prowess that he started working as a carpenter. A young director who was also starting out hired him to build some cabinets for his house. They got to know and like each other, and the director gave Ford a part in a small movie he was shooting on a minimal budget. It was turned down by 6 movie studios, but eventually became an unexpectedly massive hit. The movie was American Graffiti. The director was George Lucas. Perhaps you've heard of him? A few years later, Lucas got the go-ahead to make another movie the studios didn't really believe in, Star Wars, and he cast his new buddy Harrison Ford in it. You think you'll find your own George Lucas in the bar? I asked Cassie when she came over to refill my drink. You bet, she said with a grin. And why not? She had put herself in a place to get lucky, right here at the edge of the Hollywood Hills, where many producers and directors live. Maybe the next guy she served would be an executive at Paramount, or at least the Disney Channel, who would spot her potential. For Harrison Ford, the chance encounter with Lucas led to the cascade of events that made him one of the biggest stars of his generation. If not for those cabinets, he might never have rocketed to international fame in Star Wars. A different actor would have been frozen in a large block of carbonite as the very cool Han Solo. The idea that chance events can play such a huge role in a career is both encouraging, it can happen to me, and discouraging, but what if it doesn't? Many people in Hollywood and elsewhere believe you make your own luck, which explains the would-be screenwriters who have their scripts with them at all times, ready to present to anyone with a friendly face. Watching Cassie dash around the cafe with her big smile and lively chatter, I realized that it was possible I would see her on the big screen someday. But more than a single chance encounter would be at play. In moving to Hollywood, working at the bar, and talking to people, like me, she was creating her own opportunities. She had put all the pieces in place to make her own luck. We chatted a little more until a friend of mine arrived, and Cassie discovered that I had once been a TV producer with a fun and interesting career. At the end of the evening, when Cassie dropped the bill off at our table, she asked, "Any advice on how I can be one of the lucky ones?" "You will be," I said encouragingly. I left a big tip and walked out with an even bigger question spinning in my head. What can any of us, including Cassie, do to make ourselves one of the lucky ones? Sure, random chance plays a role in life, but we can't just shrug our shoulders and leave it at that. We have to take the right steps and control what we can. I thought of the poem by Emily Dickinson, in which she wrote that luck isn't chance, it's hard work, and fortune's expensive smile is earned. I've always liked that phrase, And now, as I walked to my car in the warm Los Angeles night, I wondered what it takes to win fortune's expensive smile. How do we go about making our own luck? I was still thinking about that question when I got back to New York and had afternoon tea with my friend Barnaby Marsh. Having gone to Oxford as a Rhodes Scholar, Barnaby still likes strong tea and scones, and I'm always happy to join him. Barnaby is in his early 40s with a quirky, original way of thinking, and he holds appointments at both the Institute for Advanced Study at Princeton and the Program for Evolutionary Dynamics at Harvard. In other words, he's the kind of guy you turn to when you're trying to figure something out. So I told him about Cassie, and I presented the Harrison Ford conundrum. If the now-famous actor hadn't met George Lucas, would he still be making his living with a hammer and nails? Barnaby sat very still for a minute or two, staring off into the distance, thinking about the problem. "It's complicated," he said finally. "Unforeseen events, like that meeting with Lucas, can play a role. But if you put enough of the right elements in place, you can take some of the onus off it's all being random chance." Well, that sounded promising. I started thinking about what those right elements for creating luck might be. Talent was surely one of them. So was hard work. "What advice would you give Cassie?" I asked him. He broke off a piece of a scone and munched it thoughtfully. "I'd say that luck is all around us, waiting to be found. But most people walk right by it and don't realize that it's there for the taking. There's enough luck in the world for everyone if you know where to look." So why do we so often miss it? Barnaby turned briefly scientific on me and pointed out that, biologically, the human attention span was set to screen out things that weren't necessary for survival. Now we need to turn that instinct on its head and learn to screen things in. "Opportunities are all around you, and you just have to learn to see them," he continued. "There are ways everyone can make themselves luckier." Barnaby was convinced that whether you're Harrison Ford looking to be an actor, a millennial wanting to find true love, or a corporate executive plotting to be CEO, you have more control over the events in your life than you realize. We often don't recognize how many things we set in motion by our own actions. Sometimes the seed of opportunity that we plant doesn't blossom into luck until weeks or months or even years later. When it does, it looks to everyone else like random chance. But we've made it happen. Call it planned serendipity. Barnaby told me that his research at Oxford had been on risk-taking, and he was working on theoretical concepts of luck at the Institute for Advanced Study. Through his academic work, he was in the process of developing a new science of luck. "You could say I have a luck lab," he said with a smile. It took only a couple of more scones to realize that we could be a great team, using his theoretical work as the basis for my more practical approach. Together, we would take the next year to explore all aspects of luck, in love and work and family and finance. Barnaby would be my guide, and we would meet weekly to try to answer Cassie's question about how she could be one of the lucky ones. What we ultimately discovered surprised both of us. We found that it wasn't magic or serendipity or rubbing horseshoes that would make Cassie lucky. It was knowing the right steps to take. So come join us on our thrilling journey of discovery. The approaches we uncovered are almost guaranteed to bring luck to Cassie and Barnaby and me and you. Part 1. Understanding Luck. Luck is what happens when preparation meets opportunity. Seneca. Chapter 1. Prepare to be lucky. Be open to opportunity, get the information you need, see what you're not seeing, drive to the intersection of chance, talent, and hard work. Barnaby's luck lab at the Institute for Advanced Study was tucked away amid the beautiful wooded fields of Princeton, New Jersey, a perfect place for thinking big thoughts about the science of making luck. As we took a walk together through the peaceful grounds one morning, Barnaby told me that Albert Einstein wandered these same tree-lined paths while mulling over his famous theories. Our new ideas might not disrupt the theory of relativity, but we hoped they would change the way people thought about luck and the possibilities for their own futures. It had rained hard the previous night, and the sun hadn't yet dried out the wet ground. Scooting around a puddle, I told Barnaby that writing my previous book, The Gratitude Diaries, had taught me that we have more control over our own happiness than we sometimes realize. I was delighted that the book had inspired so many people to lead happier lives, and I had a feeling that understanding how to make yourself lucky, under any circumstances, could have a similar effect. Barnaby nodded. If you're driven to make your life a little better and wonder why things don't always go your way, our new approach will let you claim the luck that should be yours. We both agreed that luck isn't the same as random chance. If you flip a coin 10 times to determine your future, you are relying on chance. And most people would agree, that's pretty silly. If you talk to people, prepare yourself, look for opportunity, and then jump on the unexpected events that might randomly appear, you are making luck. And that's what we all need to do. Luck isn't a zero-sum game. There's plenty of luck for everyone if you know where and how to look for it, Barnaby said. Barnaby thought the evidence was pretty clear that luck is not passive. It requires action, and many events that may seem like random chance are not so random after all. He was convinced that by understanding the underlying dynamics of luck, you can gain control over aspects of your life that once seemed to depend on chance, fate, or the phases of the moon. We would work together using insights and recent discoveries in psychology, behavioral economics, mathematics, and neuroscience to develop a new way of understanding luck. We're at the starting point of a brand new field, and instead of finding the research, we're going to have to create it, he said. The Luck Lab was the right place to do this, since the Institute for Advanced Study, where Barnaby has an academic appointment, is famous as a font for big ideas. Over the years, it has attracted geniuses from around the world, and it's fun to drive around local streets named after many of them. Along with Einstein, the great mathematician and philosopher Kurt Gödel was a professor there, and so was the early computer scientist and game theory pioneer John von Neumann. Renowned theoretical physicist J. Robert Oppenheimer, also known for his work building the first atomic bomb at Los Alamos National Laboratory, was a longtime director. And Barnaby and I felt we were the right team to tackle the project. We had very different backgrounds and life experiences. I've had a successful career as a journalist, magazine editor, and TV producer in the New York City area, and raised 2 terrific sons with my handsome doctor husband. Barnaby grew up in Alaska and was homeschooled until he started college, at which point he launched into academic and career experiences that took him around the globe. He became a top executive at a major foundation that gives away $100 million a year. A quirky and original thinker, he knows more people than anybody I've ever met. He recently settled in New York City with his wife, Michelle, and their 2 very young and adorable daughters, though settled is never the right word for him. We hoped our research in luck would be powerful and game-changing and give people a new view of their own lives and experiences. Barnaby had already been coming up with strategies about opportunity and risk and effort and how these affect your ability to transform your future. It was all very erudite and heady, and my job would be to bring it down to earth and see how the theories worked in everyday life. As a practical schedule, Barnaby would escape to this ivoriest of towers every Monday and Tuesday to make conceptual models and try to develop theories of luck that worked across all contexts, whether you were trying to get a job, find a mate, or survive as a species in the evolutionary sweepstakes. On Wednesdays, we would meet and talk them through. Along the way, I would find the academics, entrepreneurs, and celebrities who could illustrate the points and help us both see how people could wittingly or not make luck happen for themselves. By the end of the year, we would know exactly what it takes to make yourself lucky. This new science of luck would have straightforward principles that would work to make things go better in all aspects of your life. Beyond the theoretical work, it's important to understand the right actions to take so you can put yourself on the luck-making path and create the destiny you want for yourself, Barnaby said. We were so engrossed in conversation that we hardly noticed how muddy we were getting as we slipped and slid along the actual path where we were walking. By the end, my canvas shoes were thoroughly soaked and caked with dirt. Luck may be like gratitude in that a lot depends on your perspective, I told Barnaby as we emerged from the woods. I consider this a very lucky walk in that we have exciting ideas and a good plan, but someone else might see it as unlucky that I have to throw away my shoes. He smiled and said, sacrifices are always made in the name of science. I looked down at my muddy feet. Part of luck was about finding new opportunities. Compared to that, finding new shoes shouldn't be very hard. A couple of days after we got back from Princeton, Barnaby suggested I take a first shot at seeing how our basic theory worked in practice. If we were right that you make your own luck, could I try to get lucky on one particular day? For this experiment, I didn't need a blackboard full of equations. I would simply try to create my own luck. My day didn't look to be very exciting. I planned to do a few errands in the morning, then go to Penn Station and catch a train to visit my wonderful mother-in-law. Does any part of that sound lucky to you? I asked Barnaby. It also happened to be Friday, May 13th, not the obvious day to have beautiful opportunities fall from the sky. But Barnaby asked me to set out on my day with a slightly different perspective than usual. He gave me some basic guidelines for luck. I should stay attentive to opportunities, be prepared for anything, and try the unexpected. And luck will just rain down on me? I asked dubiously. Since it was already storming outside, it would have been better for some sunshine to appear. But a challenge is a challenge, and I was intrigued. My day started unremarkably with visits to the post office and drugstore, and then I headed to Penn Station. I had left plenty of time and arrived early, way too early, for my 10:15 a.m. train. Penn Station is grim and dreary, and hanging out there didn't feel very lucky at all. But with the advice to be prepared, I had studied the train schedule and knew there was an earlier train at 9:46. I didn't think there was time to make it, but why not try? When I ran to the gate, the escalator was mysteriously going up from the track, not down to it. I dashed over to a security guard hanging out nearby and asked what to do. You have to go all the way around to the other side and take the staircase, he said. I felt momentarily defeated. The train was leaving in about 1 minute, and the corridor to the other side looked long. But I thought of a high school coach who used to cheer, go for it! Take a chance! So I ran around the station to the staircase, galumphed down the stairs, and got onto the train a moment before the doors closed. What luck! I felt a surge of triumph. It was a small victory, but I had made it happen. Wait a minute, was that the secret? I could control more than I realized? A week earlier, I had been in almost the identical situation and hadn't hustled quite as much. The train door literally slammed in my face. That felt like an unlucky day, while this one suddenly felt much more positive. With the train success in my mind, I felt a surge of confidence. I arrived at the other end earlier than planned, so I took a pleasant walk to my mother-in-law's apartment. The rain had even stopped, rather than taking a cab. We went out for lunch and chatted cheerfully with the waitress at the diner. I thanked her for making me a salad that wasn't on the menu and confided that I was trying to make lucky things happen all day. At dessert, the waitress brought over a chocolate cupcake with a candle in it. This one's on us. A lucky day is worth celebrating, the waitress said. Catching an earlier train and getting a free chocolate cupcake weren't exactly earth-shattering events, but on a Friday the 13th, they definitely counted on the good side of luck. When I reported this story to Barnaby the next day, I was somewhere between amazed and baffled. I was starting to agree that luck isn't a magical and mystical force that falls from the sky. It's something that we can, at least partly, create for ourselves. That's fairly stunning to realize, since most of us sit back and hope for good luck when we really should be taking the right steps to make it happen. The sharp-tongued Australian novelist Christina Stead noted in 1938 that a self-made man is one who believes in luck and sends his children to Oxford. In other words, chance plays a role in life, but it's not everything. The foundations for luck are set by our own actions, what we try, whom we talk to, how fast we decide to run for the train. If luck is all around us, waiting to be found, then we have to stop walking right by it or whizzing past in our SUVs. Lucky occurrences usually aren't as haphazard as they may first appear. It's true that fortune is not fairly distributed, and some options are beyond your control. I had been born in the United States to middle-class parents who wanted me to advance, and in the history of the world, that counted as an enormous, unbelievable privilege. But no matter how you start out or where you hope to land, knowing the dynamics of chance changes, well, your chances. You can uncover the luck, grab it for yourself, and share it with friends, Barnaby told me now. To make good luck, you need the right information so you can prepare for the right actions. Knowing the possible steps keeps you from being buffeted by forces you can't control and gives you power over more aspects of your life. We often have greater control over our future than we realize. It was exciting to think that I didn't have to wait for lucky days. I could make them. Barnaby and I decided to launch our project with a national survey on luck, and we put it together carefully to make sure it would be wide-ranging and statistically significant. When the results started coming in, we were surprised and also delighted. Fully 82% of people believed that they had some or great influence over the luck in their lives. Only 5% thought that no matter what they did, they couldn't change their luck. So our belief that you could make luck happen fit in with an overall American attitude that random events may occur, but that doesn't mean life is out of your control. You just have to learn the right approaches. Finding those right approaches was our big challenge, because luck is in the details. The great scientist Louis Pasteur once pointed out that luck favors the prepared mind. A wise thought, but he never said what that preparation looks like. So we would try to fill in the blanks and uncover the step-by-step process for preparing to be lucky. When I mentioned to my friend Liz that I was learning how to create luck for myself, she immediately asked if I was buying a lottery ticket. But a lottery is not a good model for luck in the rest of life. Even though it's been around since the days of the Roman Empire and ropes in millions of buyers and dreamers, a lottery is just a game that raises money and hopes. You buy a ticket, and then everything else is left to chance. There are crazy odds against you and nothing you can do about them. Some Australians found one thing they could do to win, but we'll get to that later. In the big matters that make us seem truly fortunate in life, a good job, a happy family, and a feeling of success, life isn't a lottery at all. Random chance does play a part in our lives, and serendipitous events occur that you can't easily explain, but chance is just one element of the luck picture. If you think about luck as strictly random events, you're missing the bigger point. To get lucky, you need to put aside what you can't control and focus on the other elements that are completely under your control. When I visited Barnaby at the Luck Lab the next time, he took me over to the math library, where he liked to work. Library stacks are often dark, but he had a favorite table by a bay window where light poured in, and the office where Albert Einstein had worked was just below us. "We probably have a better view than he did," Barnaby said cheerfully. Inspired by the ghost of genius past, we talked about successful people we knew and tried to tease out the elements that made them lucky. Certain traits like smarts, determination, energy, and original thinking got repeated over and over. Chance sometimes played a role, good timing and all that, but it never stood alone. In addition to our national survey, Barnaby had sent questions about luck to several hundred Rhodes Scholars, and we started looking over the answers. Many people described an unexpected event that had influenced their life, a trip abroad that resulted in a job, a foundation that offered a grant, an investor they sat next to at a dinner who helped them start a company. "Serendipity," one person wrote, with far too many exclamation marks. But what seemed like serendipity often had an identifiable basis if you followed it back a few steps. The person who met the investor at dinner, for example, had an exciting idea and talked about it to everybody who would listen. A colleague who was impressed by his concept had invited him to the dinner. Lucky? Yes. Random chance? Not really. I started to see the role people had in making their own luck, and a simple formulation suddenly became clear to me. "Real luck occurs at the intersection of chance, talent, and hard work," I said. Barnaby nodded thoughtfully. "Nice. chance, talent, and hard work. Then with a little smile, he added, a little poetic, but nice. Before we could add science to the poetry, we needed to define each of the elements. For the moment, we would put chance aside and focus on the other two. Hard work is open to everyone, and so surprisingly, is talent. You don't have to be able to sing like Beyoncé or act like Meryl Streep to be lucky, though it doesn't hurt, since talent also involves elements that all of us can develop, an openness to opportunity, a willingness to take risk, an ability to think differently from others, and even a dose of optimism. With the right approach, you can make the lucky combination of chance, talent, and hard work happen for yourself and get luckier in every part of life. My lucky Friday the 13th showed me the power of these basic principles. Careful preparation and a willingness to try, I will run for that earlier train, both fit into the hard work element of luck. My decision to take a positive approach by talking to the waitress, thanking her, and being friendly was one of the skills that helps lead to luck and cupcakes. I started to think of the three elements of luck as being like one of those old-fashioned slot machines where you pull the handle and three items have to line up in a row. People get addicted to waiting for the three cherries, for example, to appear next to one another. Psychologists call it variable ratio reinforcement. You don't know when you'll get the reward, so you keep trying, expecting it to appear at the next pull of the handle. I'm much too logical to find any appeal in slot machines, but I might be won over if I knew I could line up two of the cherries myself. And that's what happens in real life. If you want a payoff of any kind, a new job, a new love, you don't have to wait for completely random luck to get those cherries lined up. The talent and hard work cherries are under your control. You can learn how to put them directly in the slots, and then you're two-thirds on your way to a lucky life. You could say that in knowing how to make luck, you turn your life into a bowl of cherries. Chapter 2. Some people have all the luck, and you can be one of them. Get the right information, believe that you're lucky, decide to find a four-leaf clover, and don't quit until you do. At our next meeting, Barnaby and I began to talk about people's preconceptions about luck. A surprisingly small percentage thought it was totally random, as our national survey showed. Some 67% of respondents said that working hard had contributed to lucky outcomes in their own life, and 64% said they got lucky by being curious and seeking new opportunities. Recognizing the nuances of making luck can be complicated. For millennia, philosophers and theologians have danced around discussions of luck. Back in 293 BC, the Romans dedicated one of the first temples, many more would follow, to Fortuna, the goddess of fortune and luck. She was widely worshipped for the bounty she could potentially distribute and the prosperity she might offer. Medieval artists portrayed the capriciousness of the fate she doled out by having her stand on a ball or next to a wheel of fortune. When the Roman poet Ovid was sent into exile, he glumly pointed out that Fortuna admits by her unsteady wheel her own fickleness. She always has its apex beneath her swaying foot. Ah, the fickle foot of fate. The equivalent Greek deity was Tyche, who was sometimes depicted in a blindfold. If the goddess who controls your destiny is blind, you're not so surprised when unexpected things happen. You have to travel pretty far and across a couple of millennia to get from Fortuna to Vanna White, who flips the letters on the endlessly popular TV show Wheel of Fortune. It is the longest-running syndicated game show ever and has been on the air in one form or another since 1975. On the TV show, you start with an element of random luck, spinning a real-life wheel with 24 slots to determine how much money you're playing for. Maybe $300 or $1,000. You can also land on a slot where you lose everything, which means Ovid was right about the fickleness of fate. But after that casino-style spin, you leave Fortuna behind and the real work begins. To actually win, you have to put in some effort, fill in the blanks, and have the skill to guess the answer before your competitor figures it out. That combination of chance, talent, and hard work is a pretty good definition of what creates good fortune, whether on a TV show or in everyday life. With apologies to the admirable Fortuna, Vanna and her game may offer a better example of what modern luck is really all about, since it puts you solidly at the intersection of hard work, talent, and chance. Some people seem naturally lucky, but it could be that they're just adept at weaving the strands of skill and effort and opportunity to their advantage. I had the feeling that anybody could learn the same techniques. I decided to look around and see what I could find. A few days later, I went to a local park to watch a 7-year-old I know play softball. It was a low-key game, and when one of the little girls got tired of standing in the outfield, she shouted that she was going to look for 4-leaf clovers. Several others quickly followed. After a while, most of the seekers gave up. They drifted back to the game or did some lackadaisical cartwheels. But one little girl in a yellow t-shirt and cutoffs, I'll call her Sunny, kept going in her search and finally jumped up in excitement. She'd found it. She ran back to her friends to show off her good luck charm. "You're so lucky, and now you'll be even luckier," said one of the friends who clustered around her. Yes, Sunny was lucky, but not in any mystical way. She'd had the persistence to keep looking after the others gave up, and an ability to spot patterns or differences that most would have missed. She didn't mind lots of disappointments and had the resilience to keep going. Since 3-leaf clovers are more common than 4-leaf clovers, by almost 10,000 to 1, she'd had to face a lot of failures before finding the winner. But she liked the challenge and always expected to find what she wanted. And she probably had fun looking, too. The little friend who announced that Sunny would go from lucky to luckier was probably right, and not because Sunny now has a 4-leaf clover. The qualities that let Sunny find that 4-leafer in the first place, persistence, focus, and attentiveness to possibility, will give her a huge boost in creating her own luck in life. When you say someone is lucky, what you really mean is that all three of the key elements, chance, talent, and hard work, converged for a great result. Even if the endpoint seems as wondrous and magical as finding a 4-leaf clover, her actions led to it one way or another, even if she didn't realize it. Thinking of herself as a lucky person and having others see her that way will only add to Sunny's advantages. Luck comes in cascades. When you start on a lucky path, you tend to stay there. I pictured some of those sweet 7-year-olds going home and complaining at dinner about their friend's good luck. "How come she found the 4-leaf clover? She's always so lucky. How come I didn't find it?" An appeasing parent might promise, "You'll get lucky and find it next time." But while that may make dinner calmer, it won't do anything to assure that the child really does improve her luck. Whether you're 7 or 70, if you see yourself as buffeted by forces over which you have no control, you tend to give up and lament your fate. Better to remind the young seeker of 4-leaf clovers that she can change her luck with focus and effort. In his play, A Streetcar Named Desire, playwright Tennessee Williams gave tough guy Stanley Kowalski the great line, "You know what luck is? Luck is believing you're lucky, that's all." Stanley, played by Marlon Brando in the movie, might not have been the brightest or nicest guy around, but he looked great in a t-shirt, and he was definitely right about luck. "To hold a front position in this rat race, you've got to believe you are lucky," he said. Rat race or not, the observation makes sense. You have to believe you're lucky to take the action that will make you lucky. The unexpected happens in life, and how you respond to it, or don't, determines whether you set yourself up to be one of the lucky ones. You can probably look back at the twists and turns that your own life has taken and marvel at the serendipitous moments that brought you to your current spot. Maybe your friend dragged you to a party you didn't plan to go to, and that's where you met the love of your life. Or you ran into the CEO in the elevator, and a chance conversation led to your current job. What if you had stayed home from the party or taken a different elevator? You shake your head and marvel at how lucky you were. It's true that things we haven't planned can have an extraordinary influence on all that comes after. But far more important than what objectively occurs is what you do with each event. You could have stood in that elevator and been too intimidated to talk to the CEO, in which case it wasn't a lucky ride at all. Or you could have had a few too many tequila shots at the party and been too blurry-eyed to notice the handsome spouse-to-be lurking by the guacamole. Similarly, George Lucas hiring Harrison Ford to build his cabinets was a more or less random event that didn't guarantee any outcome beyond a nice place to store the pasta and ketchup. The big success Ford had came from his actions afterwards. Happenstance plays a role in all our lives, but it's not as deterministic as we sometimes think. My terrific literary agent, Alice Martell, started her career as an attorney at a major law firm and quickly decided she'd made a mistake. She just didn't love law. One of her clients happened to be a best-selling author, and after she and Alice became friends, Alice helped her negotiate a big book contract. The publisher on the other side of the desk was so impressed that he asked Alice if she'd ever thought of becoming an agent. Until that moment, she never had. "But once he said it, I went to work in publishing and eventually started my own agency," Alice told me one day as we were chatting about life and luck in her pretty office. "I love what I do, and I'm always amazed at how lucky I was. If the publisher hadn't made that comment, I'd probably still be practicing law and unhappy every day." There's a certain romantic charm to the idea that your career was launched by simple serendipity, but luck rarely appears from nowhere. Lucky seeds have to land on fertile ground, and chance events need to merge with intent and direction for anything to happen. I suggested to Alice that since she had been moderately miserable as a lawyer, her eyes were probably open for other opportunities. Having the best-selling author as a client presented one lucky path, but if that opportunity hadn't happened, she would have been alert for another. Your next client might have been an actor, and you would have negotiated his contract and followed that path. "In that case, you could be in Hollywood running a movie studio now," I said, only half-joking. A couple of weeks after we had the conversation, Alice called me to say that she was still reeling at the new view of her own career. She'd always felt like forces beyond her control had determined her career, moving her from unhappy lawyer to happy and successful agent. Now she was willing to believe that her own determination and will had set the luck in motion. "I've spent all these years fretting that if not for a few lucky events, I could still be suffering as a lawyer. You've completely changed my view," she said. She was also a little wistful about the fact that she wasn't running that movie studio. Like Alice, you've probably had those pivotal moments in life where everything changed. Looking back, you can see them clearly. The comment made, the job that was offered, the person who caught your eye across a crowded room. As you tell the story of your own life, those are the big events that you probably describe. But what did you put in place, maybe without realizing it, to make those moments happen? And equally important, how many other moments did you simply miss? The real trick is to learn how to recognize those moments of luck moving forward. The combination of chance, talent, and hard work that transforms the biggest events in your life, like love and career, also puts a mark on everyday occurrences. Many things that you attribute to random luck turn out not to be so random. So, for example, imagine that you're driving in a big American city and need to park your car. You're cruising slowly down the block, because there's a truck in front of you, no doubt, when a big SUV pulls out of a spot. You swoop in and, with motor still running, check the sign and discover the spot is even legal. Whoop-de-doo! You've just saved the $32.50 that it would have cost to park in a garage, and you can put it toward ordering an extra drink and appetizer at dinner. In some cities, you still have to feed the meter, but nothing is perfect. Landing that spot may strike you as nothing more than a classic example of being in the right place at the right time. You didn't seem to do anything special. You just drove by as someone else pulled out. Lucky you. But if spot finding is truly random, everyone should be equally good at it. And that's not the case. A lot of people will tell you that they're simply lousy at street parking, count me among them, and would never even try it, while others, including my husband Ron, are masterful. He drives to the theater or other evening events in Manhattan at least a couple of times a week, and he never, ever goes to a parking lot. He doesn't have a rabbit's foot hanging from his rearview mirror, but he does have a few talents. He's extremely observant and has sharp vision, so he'll notice someone getting into a parked car on a side street or the slight motion of an engine turning on, and he'll immediately head in that direction. He also relies on his great memory and head for numbers – different streets allow parking at different hours – to know exactly which street will be the best bet. With his combination of experience, preparation, knowledge, and observation, he simply makes himself lucky. The bad-eyed and impatient among us will never be great at parking, but knowing your strengths and weaknesses means you can find the techniques necessary to improve your luck. My technique is to let my husband drive. Recognizing that there are factors other than random chance at work means you can change your approach and increase your luck. Anyone can learn the streets the way my husband has, arrive early to an area that opens for parking at 6 p.m., and get one of those lucky spots. Even I have managed to do that on occasion. Once you see the elements that go into generating luck, you realize that luck isn't random if anyone can generate more and more of it. Lucky occurrences usually aren't as haphazard as they may first appear. Like meteors shooting across the sky, they can seem magical at first glance. But once you know the principles behind them, they are both predictable and explicable. People often talk about being in the right place at the right time, but that rightness often happens because you've taken all the necessary steps along the way. The writer and filmmaker Jean Cocteau once wryly pointed out that he believed in luck because, how else can you explain the success of those you dislike? I sympathize. It's comforting to conclude that the person who has her name in lights or has found the parking spot was simply luckier than you, rather than that she had more talent, drive, or smarts. And maybe she didn't. Certainly there are a lot of people with fancy cars and huge followings on Instagram who don't seem completely deserving.
But instead of dismissing them as unfathomably lucky, you might try to figure out how they got where they did. The good news is that luck isn't a zero-sum game. You don't have to knock somebody else off his perch in order to increase your own luck. There's plenty of luck to go around if you know how to look for it. The question is, how do you make luck happen for yourself? Sometimes luck is all about getting the right information. You ask one more question and suddenly seem like the luckiest person in the room. As an example, Barnaby offered a thought experiment. You have to decide whether you want to walk down a dark tunnel that has a big prize at the end. You're told that 1 in 100 people who go into the tunnel fall into a deep hole and can't get out. Would you go? Probably not, I said, proving that I'm not much of a risk taker. Barnaby laughed. Okay, you wouldn't, but a lot of people might decide that the odds aren't bad and try it. And what if you're told that 50 people fall into that hole? Then I'd stay away from the tunnel. No prize at the end is worth those odds, I said. I'd agree, Barnaby said. But now I'll give you some information. All the people who made it to the end of the tunnel and got the big prize had flashlights. Aha! Now the excursion doesn't seem quite as random or risky. You can go to your local Walmart, buy yourself the sturdiest LED flashlight you can find, and set off for the prize. You've figured out how to be lucky. In real life, information is rarely so straightforward. But we're always walking down metaphoric dark tunnels, hoping for something special and rewarding at the end. A better job, greater success, a chance to meet Prince or Princess Charming. And there are indeed always pitfalls and potholes we can fall into. Being able to shed some light on the situation makes us luckier and better able to manage the risks and opportunities. Once we have our flashlights in hand, we have to know where to shine them. We regularly miss lucky opportunities because we're looking in the wrong place or don't notice what's in front of us. Most of us think we're seeing the world as it is, but we're simply not. The most important talent anyone who seems lucky possesses is a very basic one, the ability to pay attention and notice opportunities.
A great example of how easy it is to miss something important comes from the psychologists Christopher Chabrice and Daniel Simons, who met some 20 years ago at Harvard University and began doing research on attention and perception. They created a now famous video, The Invisible Gorilla, in which six college-age men and women, half in black t-shirts and half in white ones, are moving around, and you're asked to count how many times the players wearing white shirts pass the basketball. Okay, you can do this. You focus carefully on the players in white and watch the ball. At the end of the short video, the announcer's voice asks how many passes you counted. If you get the correct answer of 15, you probably pat yourself on the back. Good observing. But the next question may change your mind. Did you see the gorilla? The gorilla? Halfway through the game, a person in a gorilla costume came to the middle of the screen, beat his chest, and walked off. Whoops! In experiments that have been done over and over with people of all ages and backgrounds, starting with Harvard students, at least half missed the gorilla. If you haven't seen the video, you're probably convinced that of course you would see the gorilla. Everybody thinks that, but you get so busy counting passes that you simply miss the other action that's happening right in front of you. The video got so much attention when it first appeared that the researchers did an update. I found it online and tried it out. This time, I knew about the gorilla, so even as I was counting the passes, I noticed him coming in and felt pretty good about myself. But the researchers had another surprise at the end. Did you notice that one of the players walked off the court, or that the color of the background curtain changed in the middle of the game from red to gold? If you're like most people, including me, the answers are no and no. If you're overlooking a gorilla beating his chest and a background changing color, there's a good chance that you're missing a lot of things all around you, many that could turn into luck. So how do you change that? Barnaby and I were mulling that when we attended a conference in Chicago and happened to be seated one night with two neuroscientists who do research in the area of attention. Over dinner, where I definitely noticed the excellent grilled fish, I brought up the invisible gorilla and the problem of knowing where to look. Dr. Ed Hamlin, who has taught at Duke and the University of North Carolina and now runs the Center for the Advancement of Human Potential in Asheville, explained that good attention is flexible, allowing us to switch between narrow focus and open focus. In the gorilla video, you're narrowly focused on counting the passes, so you miss the bigger picture. If you allow yourself to watch the scene with a wider view, you see the gorilla, but you can't count the passes. So where should you look to capture everything? Good attention is flexible, said Dr. Hamlin. You always have to adjust to demands and circumstances. A baseball fan, he described the All-Star game he just watched, in which the second baseman bobbled a ball hit his way. He'd probably done that play hundreds of times in practice and never missed it, but this time he looked up to see where the runner was, and he lost his focus. The ability to switch from the narrow view to the wider one can be the key to a lucky play or a mortifying miss. Shifting your attention and recognizing the right place to look at the right moment isn't always easy. Dr. Hamlin admitted that even though he works with attention problems, his wife complains that he never knows when dinner is ready. He's so busy burrowing into the work in front of him that he misses other signals, like the fact that it's 7:30 at night and the smell of roasted chicken is wafting from the kitchen. Barnaby, who has a great ability to concentrate, pointed out that even though we were sitting in a noisy restaurant with the din of conversation all around us, if somebody on the other side of the room said his name, he would immediately hear it. Our other dinner companion, David Ziegler, a researcher in neuroscience at the University of California School of Medicine, San Francisco, described that as pop-out attention, the things that grab our notice no matter what. More important and subtle is top-down attention, the events and circumstances that we notice only when we focus. All of us are bombarded each day with millions of bits of information, and we get lucky when we know where we want to focus or which possibilities we want to fire up. Estimates vary, but big data analysts at IBM say we create some 2.5 quintillion bytes of data every day, which you can write out with 17 zeros if that helps you see just how big a number we're talking about. Needless to say, we're not built to take in even the tiniest fraction of that. Possibilities abound in every direction, and if you wait for one of those bites or possibilities or bits of stimulus to turn into luck, you're sure to miss it. As with the gorilla video, you have to know where you're looking, because it takes looking in the right place to get lucky. When you think of luck, you tend to consider the pop-out kind. You win the lottery. You get to the intersection just as the light turns green. A tree falls down in a storm and misses your house. Those events announce themselves as being good luck, and they're hard not to notice. But most luck arrives in subtler form. You have to pay attention as it quietly swirls around you, ready to be snagged. As Barnaby and I walked away from that dinner, we talked about the challenge of recognizing lucky opportunities and agreed that we would each make a focused effort to see more possibilities. However, that was just a general step, and we were most excited to start analyzing and understanding the specific actions that contribute to luck and develop the principles that could make you lucky in any aspect of your life. We had just one more topic to discuss first. If luck is at the intersection of talent, hard work, and random chance, what influence can we have over chance itself? Chapter 3. Pick the statistic you want to be. Understand the odds. Don't confuse risk with luck. Wear Hawaiian shirts in Boston once in a while. In talking about the need to make your own luck, Barnaby and I often used the shorthand that luck doesn't fall from the sky. But we understood that if you want to be literal, even that truth isn't 100% accurate. A woman named Ann Hodges was at her home in Alabama one day in 1954, napping on the couch under a big quilt when a hunk of black rock crashed through the ceiling and hit her on the thigh. With that unlucky burst from the sky, she became the only confirmed person in history to have been hit by a meteorite. You probably shouldn't spend a lot of time worrying about meteorite strikes, since, quote, it's more likely you get hit by a tornado and a bolt of lightning and a hurricane all at the same time, Florida State College astronomer Michael Reynolds said about that remarkable hit. And yet we do worry. Scientists say an asteroid that smashed into the Earth 66 million years ago led to a change in climate that caused the extinction of the dinosaurs. It was long ago and rare, but who knows? If there's an asteroid strike every 66 million years, another may be due tomorrow. Now that I was thinking of luck as a combination of chance, talent, and hard work, I had decided that the wisest approach was to put chance aside and focus on the other two, the ones you could control. But I also understood that the unpredicted and the unforeseen can seem overwhelming. If you're going to be hit by a meteorite, everything else seems kind of unimportant. So before figuring out the principles of making luck, I wanted to get a little better perspective on randomness. We've all had situations that seem like crazy coincidence. You're traveling in a remote location and run into someone you know. Or an old friend from college calls just as you're thinking about her. Your reaction is probably, "Amazing! What are the odds?" And it turns out the odds can be very different than you expect. The random and unlikely keep us enthralled, at least in part because they can turn life and expectations so dramatically upside down. There are 7 billion people on the planet, so even if something is a million in one shot, it will happen to 7,000 of us. That's a lot of bolts from the blue. Impossible odds don't mean something is impossible. In 2016, the English football club Leicester City was given a 5,000-to-1 chance of winning the championship of the Premier League. For some perspective, bookmakers gave the same odds to Bono becoming the next pope. Essentially, those odds mean, are you crazy? It's not going to happen. The Premier League is big and powerful, with no draft or salary caps, and the same 4 teams have won the championship for the previous 20 years. Little underfunded Leicester City had lost so many games the previous season that they barely escaped being tossed out of the league altogether. The closest they had come to a championship was finishing second in the 1928-1929 season. They spent about a tenth as much on their players as the more popular teams like Manchester United and Arsenal. But with all that, they won. One way to think of 5,000-to-1 odds is that if the teams in the Premier League played for 5,000 years, Leicester City would win the title once. The BBC called it one of the greatest sporting stories of all time. Closer to home, NBC Sports said, "It's not like anything we can comprehend in America." Others noted that during spring training in America, even the worst baseball teams are given 500-to-1 or so odds of winning the World Series. Leicester City was considered 10 times worse than the worst. But the funny thing is that after the win, various pundits had explanations for why it all happened. They praised the analytics the team used in recruiting and signing players, pointed to the surprising coach, and noted that the famous four top teams all sputtered. Had the players on Leicester City made their luck, as the first two explanations would suggest, or was it simply that year 5,000 comes around if you wait long enough? I certainly don't know enough about English football to say, but it's definitely easier to explain an event after it occurs than before. However you cast it, the Leicester City story is inspiring even to those who don't know that English football is really the same as American soccer. However long the odds, if you want to make luck happen, you don't quit. Something can happen. You can change the odds. You can surprise yourself and everyone else. There's a parable about two rulers who are rolling the dice to see who will control the world. The first rolls, and each die lands with a 6 on its face. A total of 12 is as good as it can be. "I win. You can give up," he tells his opponent. But the other leader insists on his turn. When he rolls the dice, one lands on a 6, and the other breaks into two pieces, with half showing a 6 and the other half a 1. So he got a 13. What are the odds? You don't actually know the best that can be done unless and until you keep trying to do it. You could end up being surprised by outcomes beyond what you originally considered. Barnaby spent years of his academic career studying risk, and when I brought up the question of odds at our next Wednesday meeting, he pointed out that one way to beat the odds is to personalize them. "Pick the statistic you want to be," he told me. "What does that mean?" I asked. We were having breakfast at a local cafe, and I glanced over at the banana bread on the table, trying to decide if I should have a piece. Barnaby caught my gaze and smiled as he picked his example. "Think of it this way. Statistics now say that about a third of Americans are obese. But that doesn't mean every individual has a 1 in 3 chance of being too fat. You can decide what you're going to eat and how much you'll exercise, and that will affect your weight. You get to decide which statistic you're in." "So I shouldn't have the banana bread?" I said with a sigh. Barnaby laughed. "It's not really a problem for you, and that's the point. Saying there's a 30% chance of being obese is one thing. Saying that you, whoever you are, have that probability is very different." I ate the banana bread, and since the topic intrigued me, I did a little more research later and found out that Barnaby was completely right. Most studies show that genetic factors play only a small part in obesity, and lifestyle is more important than anything else. Research out of the Harvard School of Public Health shows that even if you have the genes associated with obesity, what you eat and how much you exercise will have a greater influence on your shape than your genetics. Where you live has a role in obesity, too. In some states, topped by Alabama, obesity is over 35%, while in Colorado, the perennially leanest state, it's more like 20%. But if you live in one of the fattest states and eat fruit and vegetables and go for daily runs, you'll easily beat the odds. In fact, the overall odds won't apply to you at all. As we continued with our breakfast discussion of risk and statistics, Barnaby surprised me by telling me that when his first daughter, Mandarin, was born, he wanted her to share the bed with her parents. His wife, Michelle, thought it was a terrible idea. She told Barnaby that co-sleeping babies are 5 times more likely to die than those who are put safely in their own cribs. Some are crushed when parents roll over on them, and others suffocate in sheets and blankets or get wedged in the sides of beds. There is also a clear connection between the devastation of sudden infant death syndrome, SIDS, and co-sleeping. One comprehensive review showed that 69% of babies who died of SIDS slept in their parents' bed. The statistics were pretty clear. The safest place for a baby is in a crib. But babies all over the world have traditionally slept with their mothers, and I felt there would be benefits for nursing and other considerations, so I took another look at the statistics, Barnaby said. He found that many of the risks of co-sleeping occurred when parents were intoxicated or obese or had low